Hello and welcome. My name is Zach Weaver, and I'm the senior pastor at Liberty Vineyard Church. I'm so glad you tuned in to the sermon today. I hope that it blesses, encourages, and challenges you as you begin to explore the abundant life God has for you. If you're in the area, consider joining us for our weekly services, Sunday mornings at 10:30. We have lunch together, free of charge, each week following our service. Everyone is welcome. We're located in the city of Tucker, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta. Directions and other information are available on our website at libertyvineyardchurch.com. Welcome to Sunday, everybody. I'm glad y'all are here. Why don't we open up with a word of prayer? Father God, as we get into this time together, as we just continue our time of worship with a time of teaching and a time of just hearing from you, Lord, would you speak to our hearts? Would you open our minds and our ears and just our spirits up to what you want to do? Lord, may we be receptive to you. May we just be honoring with our lives to you, God. Lord, we're here to connect with one another, but we're also here to connect with you. And just pray that you would bring in our hearts just a unity of spirit with you, God, that we would be on point with where you want us to be. Lord, speak to us this morning. Speak clearly in our minds and our hearts. Speak loudly so we understand. Just move in our midst. In Jesus' name, amen. Let me name some pieces of music, and tell me if you know these pieces of music. I'll do my best to kind of help us along here. Rossini's Barber of Seville. Do we know this song? This is the one, if you've seen the cartoons with Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, I'm sure this is what Rossini was originally intending. There we go. So that's Rossini's. What about Rossini's William Tell Overture? The background to every Lone Ranger and horse riding thing you've ever seen. Right? Strauss's The Blue Danube Waltz. Right. If you've ever seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, there you go. That may have been the background for that. And there are others. Beethoven's Egmont Overture, Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream music, and on and on and on. All of these pieces of music, besides all being works of great classical importance, all have one thing in common. They're all in a classification of music that we call incidental. See, incidental music is music that is meant to be the accompaniment to something else, to some action that's happening on the stage, to some program that's happening. They're meant to create the mood, the atmosphere, the background, to give the excitement and the energy, to provide the foundation upon which all of the action that we actually visibly see is placed. But what's happened over the, in some cases, centuries, but what's happened over the decades and over the years with this, is that a lot of times what happens with all great things, the music itself has outshone the original script, the original play, the original intent, to where now, when you would have gone to hear Beethoven's Egmont Overture as the accompaniment to his opera, or you would have gone and seen Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream as the accompaniment to King Friedrich's production of Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, now we go to the concert hall to hear just those pieces of music. I've played most of these pieces of music completely independent of the things for which they were originally written to accompany. Strauss's Blue Danube Waltz was never a concert piece. It was meant to be danced to. Most of the waltzes that you hear, the minuets that we know, the one that Bach made so famous, though he didn't write it, the dun ta da 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 dun 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 ta da 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 dun dun. Started that too high. But those that was supposed to be the background to the music that people danced to. It was never meant to be a concert hall piece. My family and I, to put it in modern terms, a few weeks back, it's about 3 weeks ago, we went to a concert up at what used to be the Verizon Amphitheater, and it was a night of celebrating the music of John Williams. Now, if you know who John Williams is, this is the composer that wrote the music for some of our most beloved songs. Star Wars, E.T., Superman, the Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, and on and on and on. Some of our most beloved pieces of music. Well, what's happened with these pieces of music is that there's a generation of people that this is true. Now, I teach a lot of students that want to play, and they run into these songs in the books. And they're like, I know that song. I'm like, yeah, I can't believe you've seen that movie. Oh, I've never seen the movie. There's a generation of people where the music has now exceeded the thing for which it was written. And this is what happens with great things. Great things have a tendency to come out and overshadow and see the music that was originally incidental. The music that was meant to be the background actually has now become the foreground. The thing that was hidden, that was disguised back there, that was actually fueling the production has now overshadowed the production itself. The music is recognized as the driving force. We realize that in movies or a show or any of those things, if you try to watch those without the music, they just kind of fall flat. They seem rather empty. All the dialogue in the world has a lot of trouble being really felt and really immerse yourself in it without a great score, without a great piece of music to back it up. It's just not as impactful. Well, we've been in a series over the last number of weeks, and today we're going to wrap up the series, our study on Gideon, God's hesitant hero. And if you've learned one thing about Gideon through this, it's how God takes anyone, the most reluctant, the most fearful, the most uncertain person, and when he's at work in their life, can do the most amazing things through him. The one thing that I think we've come to at the climax of this series is that at the very end of Gideon's story, the people come and they want to crown him king. All the Israelites come together and they say, "Be our king." And Gideon says, it's not, I won't rule over you, nor will my sons rule over you, but the Lord will rule over you. What Gideon's saying is, it's not me. You don't want me. It's God. And he's trying to communicate this to the people. He's the one doing all of this. I'm just the one he's supporting. I'm the action. The one that you see, I may be the face of everything that's happening, but it's God that's doing it all. I've spent quite a bit of time going through the story of Gideon, and I've on purpose intentionally left out one section, probably the biggest section in the story of Gideon, what many would consider to be the culmination of the story, which is the battle. The battle where Gideon stands up and he breaks the jars and they have their torches and they break up into even smaller commandments. But I don't want to talk about that. And the reason I don't want to talk about that is because that's the front. That's the action. That's the thing we see. But the greatness is what's behind that. You see, that story, that battle, it's not the thing. God's the thing. The story, the battle, was won long before any of the action actually took place. And what happens a lot of times unintentionally is that we remember the stories. We remember the events. We remember all the great things that have happened with David and with Moses and with Noah and then again with Gideon and with Solomon and with Paul and with all of these other people. And we remember the stories. And sometimes it's easy to forget what's behind all of the stories, what's fueling all of the stories. So I want to suggest kind of a mantra for this for today for us, just a thing to remember over and over again. And I'm going to keep coming back to this. And it's that we are not the thing. All right? We are not the thing. And this is what we must constantly be communicating in all of our discipleship relationships, which, if that sounds like I just made a big leap, that's where we left off last week, talking about the idea of discipleship. Last week, we introduced the idea of being caught and taught. I catch what somebody is saying, and then I begin to teach it myself. That's the whole concept of discipleship, following along, walking step by step in relationship with somebody, and after a while, you begin to catch what they have. You begin to catch the way that they teach, catch the ideas that they're trying. And before long, it's very indistinguishable between the way that you relate those things and the way they relate. And so you catch them and then you take a step out on your own and you begin to teach them this idea of caught and taught. This discipleship relationship has to be at its foundation, at its basis. We must constantly be communicating we are not the thing. God is the thing. We are, as John Wimber says, we're just change in God's pocket. Right? We are incidental. Our job is like Gideon's job. It's to fulfill the role that God has called us to, and then to point the people to Him. Jesus had a doozy of a time trying to do this. I mean, if anybody understood discipleship, it was Jesus. But He had a hard time making this jump for people, convincing people of this. He would say, it's not me, it's the Father in me. Right? He would say, He's the one I'm following. His words are the ones I'm saying. His actions are the ones I'm taking. Now, of course, in this case, Jesus is God. And I mean, let's be honest, that helps a little bit. But still, that's the quintessential discipleship relationship. He's trying to communicate the effect that, okay, I know you're with me and you see me doing this, but you need to understand that it's not me, it's God in me. Okay? I'm doing, he says in effect, what he does, but through my voice. That's what we're supposed to do. Through our voice, through our sphere of influence, communicate what the Father is giving to us. But always, 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 always pointing people to God and not to ourselves, right? We are the face of God to the world, right? We are the action which the music, which God fuels. We are that play. We are that movie. We are that scene for the short time that we're on earth that's being played out according to God, if we'll let Him drive us, right? If you let God rule you, if you let God dictate you and your life and your actions, anything can and will happen. Gideon had no plan for this to happen, and one day everything changed, and it changed the rest of his life. And his whole process was him learning more and more to walk in step with God, learning more and more to listen to what God was saying, learning more and more to let God dictate his actions to the point that when it was time for him to be crowned king, he said, it's not me, it's God. You want God. You don't want me. I'm not the thing. If you let you rule you, and let you rule your life, you may do amazing things. It's absolutely possible. But they will all fall flat in the grander scheme because they don't have that support. They don't have that foundation of the God of the universe that's fueling, that's coordinating, that's orchestrating, that's pulling all of these things together. But people will see us. Despite how much we want to point them to God and say it's God, they're going to see us first. They will. Right? They'll see us first, and they'll see the things that we do, just like Jesus. You remember Jesus would say, believe in me. Believe that the Father is in me. But if you can't believe in that, just believe in the things that I'm doing. Why did he say that? Because he understood for a lot of people it's surface first. You see the action and it makes you wonder, whoa, what's going on there? What's fueling that? What's behind that? A lot of times it is, you start with just the everyday, with the thing that you see on the surface. And then as people have started to walk alongside, you pull back that curtain a bit and let people see it's not me, you understand. It's God in me. You expose what's really at work here. This idea is captured very, very well, I think, in the book of Judges, in the story of Gideon. Now, I want to just look at one specific verse just before the battle begins. This is in Judges chapter 7, verse 17. Gideon is before the army. He stands there and he says to them, it says in verse 17, keep your eyes on me. Do just as I do. Keep your eyes on me. Do just as I do. You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of a New Testament verse that has a very similar sound to it, but causes a lot, I find, of complications for people. And I know I've struggled with this as well. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul says a very similar statement. He says, follow me as I follow Christ. I mean, listen to the echo of that, of what is originally said by Gideon. Keep your eyes on me, do just as I do. Well, who is Gideon watching? Well, he's watching God. Who's Gideon following? He's following God. But in a battle, somebody has to be the front man. Somebody has to be the leader. Somebody needs to be the one in charge for them to go to. And God called Gideon to fill that role. That's who he called him to be, right? What ho, mighty warrior, God is with you. He called Gideon to fill that role for him. And then he called other people around him to follow him. Are the people following Gideon or are they following God? Follow me as I follow Christ. The people get the idea, though. Those 300, if you look at the shout that Gideon tells them to make and then the shout that they give in the middle of the battle, they declare two things I think are really important for us to get. They say, for the Lord and for Gideon. Why? Because they understand it's not Gideon alone. And it's God working through him for the Lord and for Gideon. In other words, Gideon's following God. We'll follow him and we'll be following God. But I don't want us to get the wrong idea because this is a sticky point sometimes that follow me and I'll follow Christ. That can be a tough one. I want to dig into that for a minute because I want us, as we end our time in Gideon, to understand the final piece about this idea of discipleship, about this idea of growing closer in God, of walking more and more in step with him, and then asking others to come along and walk step in step with us as well. So let's look back at Jesus' approach to discipleship for a minute. We did some of this last week, and now I want to dig into the final piece of it. Now, I want to look at it by asking, how did Jesus call the first disciples? Peter and John. No, sorry, that's what he called them, but that's not how he called them. How did he call the first disciples? He said two words, follow me. Right? At the end of Jesus' time on earth, when he goes to reconcile things with Peter, and Peter's so distracted with all the other stuff that's going on around, do you remember what he says? You follow me. Follow me It's a critical point in Jesus' ministry from the first to the last. Because as they followed him, they got closer to him in relationship. As they followed him, they began to understand more and more who he was, how he operated. And as they followed him, he consistently pointed them to the Father. He consistently demonstrated the kingdom, explaining what it was like, explaining what God was like, explaining what the Holy Spirit was like. He consistently pointed them past himself to God. Do you remember how many of the stories, how many of the illustrations are, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. This is what God is like. This is over and over and over again. Jesus looked past himself to the guy, to the idea, to the heaven that was fueling him through all of this stuff on his earth and his earthly ministry. He's pointing past himself to God. And it's probably why it was so frustrating to Jesus at the end of his time with the disciples. In John 14, Philip asks this question, Lord, show us the Father. And Jesus, it doesn't say it, but he's probably beating his head against the wall. And he says, have I been with you all this time? In other words, how did you not get that? Show us the Father. What do you think I've been doing for 3 years? That's been my whole ministry. Show us the Father. Of course I'm showing you the Father. What does he say? If you've seen me, then you've seen the Father. I've been showing you the Father. But did you catch what he says? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. People will see us. People will see you. If you are doing everything that God has called you to do, they will still see you first. We must constantly and consistently point them to the Father. Right? They will not initially, unless they're already following hard after God, are not initially going to see God in you. That is not going to be the way that they see you first. They will see your actions. They will see the way that you treat one another. They will see the words that you use. They will see the way that you behave, especially when you don't know, when you don't think anybody's watching you. Why is it that Jesus communicated so much about this is how you should respond in forgiveness? This is how you should treat somebody that's your enemy. This is what you should do with your earthly possessions. Why? Because these are actions that are going to call people to go, what is it that's different about you? But they're going to see that first. And then we point them to the Father. So the first thing Jesus does is he says, follow me. And then the second thing is that he sends them out. Okay? In John 20, 21, Jesus tells the disciples, as the Father sent me, now I'm sending you. Now we're going to dive into that a little bit, because that is that critical importance of not just showing the Father, always going back and demonstrating the Father, but also understanding the next step, the sending out. As the Father sent me, now I'm sending you. In Matthew 28, 19, the verse that we talked about last week, he tells them, go into all the world and make disciples. Right? Jesus' message would have been very clear. You followed alongside with me. You've walked with me for these 3 years. You have seen the Father. I have demonstrated to you everything that you need to be demonstrated. Now you're ready to follow God the way I followed God. Now you're ready to do it. Now you go and do likewise, right? Maturation, growing up in that relationship, must involve separation. Maturing in a discipleship relationship, that's a lot of lispy things, has to involve a separation, a stepping out on your own. We have to do like what the ladies' Bible study has been studying, to taste and to see for ourselves that the Lord is good. We have to invite others to go out for themselves and find out. Nobody can taste for you. Nobody can see for you. You must go out and experience that for yourselves. Words like follow me. Words like Gideon says, keep your eyes on me, or do as I do. These are starting points. These are things you tell your children. These are things you tell maybe a novice in a field or somebody that's working underneath you in your job. These are starting points. They're mentoring words. They're apprenticeship words. They're discipleship words. Come alongside me. Follow me. I know how to do this. I mean, let's put it in real perspective in life for a minute. If you're training somebody on a computer program or to run a piece of equipment, you know how to do it and you have to show them, right? You don't just point them to the computer equipment and go, here, good luck. I'll watch you do it. They watch you do it. That's the first step. They watch you do it. You sit in front and drive the thing, and then they watch. After they've watched for a while, you say, why don't you try a little of this? Your whole goal, if you are a mentor, if you are a person discipling, if you're a teacher, in charge, any of these things, your whole goal should be for that person to not need you anymore. If they still need you, you didn't do the right job. Your job is to not them not to need you. I have to remind myself of that with my students all the time. And I have to tell that to my students sometimes, that remember, you only have me for a little while. My whole point is that you don't need me at some point. If I don't teach myself out of a job, I'm a bad teacher. I mean, that's the truth. If you're not bossing yourself out of that role, you want them to come up and to be the next managers. You want to manage somebody so that they can manage others. I want to dig into that a little bit more, because the eventual goal is that one day they will be ready. One day this person is going to be prepared. One day they are going to be capable, and this is really important, motivated to go out and do it for themselves. They need to have this desire to go out. Okay? This is what Paul is after, and we hear this communicated. I know a minute ago when we talked about follow me as I follow Christ, that sounds sometimes a little bit arrogant. You know, follow me. I know what I'm doing. You follow me. But we can see that that's a necessary point, a necessary step. And I want you to understand that comes in chapter 11 of 1 Corinthians. Let's back up a little bit into chapter 3, and you'll understand how Paul gets to this point, because Paul is really good at working up to a point. He starts from something, and he builds, and he builds, and he builds, and he builds, and in culmination, he has to say this. Follow me as I follow Christ is the culmination. Let's back up to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. I want you to hear the language that happens here. So right at the beginning, he says, dear brothers and sisters, when I was with you, I couldn't talk to you like I would mature Christians. I had to talk to you like you belonged to this world, like you were spiritual infants in the Christian life. Ouch. I had to feed you milk and not solid food because you couldn't handle anything better. Are you still aren't ready? You're still controlled by your own sinful desires. You're still jealous of one another, quarreling with one another. Doesn't that prove that you're controlled by your own self? You're acting like people that don't belong to the Lord. One of you says, I'm a follower of Paul. And another one says, well, I prefer Apollos. Aren't you just acting like those non-Christians? Because who's Apollos anyway? And who's Paul? That we should care about such quarrels. We should be the cause of such quarrels. We are only servants. Through us, God caused you to believe. Each of us did the work the Lord gave us. My job was to plant the seed in your hearts. Apollo watered it. But it was God, not us, that made it grow. The one who does the planting and the watering, they're not important. God is important, because he's the one who makes the seed grow. Let's stop right there for a second. That's that incidental relationship. right? We are not the thing. That's what Paul is saying. You think I'm the thing and somebody else thinks Apollos is the thing. You got it wrong. Neither one of us are the thing. Are they the ones? He talks about it with this gardening analogy, and I love that. He says some people water it, right? Some people plant. Well, guess what? Those are the people you see. Those are the people on the surface. You see the farmer out there doing all the sowing in the fields. You see all the farmhands that go out there and do this. You see the people out harvesting. These are the face of what's happening at the farm. But guess what? Not a single one of those people is in charge of making sure it grows. It's God that makes sure it grows. They're the face of it. They're the ones they see. But if you think that they have any control over whether or not it rains, you're wrong. If you think they have any control over what nutrients, whether or not it grows, that's all God, and that's what he's saying. This is echoed by the author of Hebrews. Very, very similar. I want you to hear the similar kind of language that he uses as well. This is in Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5, starting in verse 12, listen to these words. You have been Christians a long time now, and you ought to be teaching others. Instead, you need someone to teach you again the basic things. To basically be a beginner again, you need to learn about the scriptures. You're like babies who drink only milk and can't eat solid food. Any person living on milk isn't very far along in the Christian life and doesn't know much about doing what's right. Solid food is for the mature people who have trained themselves to recognize the difference between right and wrong and then do what's right. What I want you to hear in both of those, is that the author of Hebrews, didn't want the disciples, the people that were there in the church, being led to be followers forever. They didn't want them to follow them forever. Isn't that what the author of Hebrews says? You've been Christians a long time. By now, you ought to be the ones teaching others. In other words, I'm trying to teach myself out of a job here. I've been trying to preach you guys out of a job. I've been trying to pray you guys out of a job. I've been trying to write letters to get you out on your own so that you don't need me to teach you the basics. You go and do it. Isn't that what they're trying to say? See, those who were discipling had bigger plans for their disciples. Paul makes it clear. It's not me. It's God. The author of Hebrews makes it clear. I don't want you to still need to be under somebody else's basic teaching. Does he say you don't need to follow anybody anymore? You don't need to have an authority? No. But he says you ought to be being responsible for other people now. There's this plan that I'm not going to be with you forever. I'm trying to disciple myself out of a job. Do you see? Over and over, they say, it's not me, it's God. I'm not the thing. I have to remember. We have to remember. They had to remember that we don't want them to follow, and I know this sounds a little contradictory, but work with me here. We don't want them to follow us. We want to lead them. And that is a critical, distinct, important difference. Followers will become like us. But when you lead someone, you are leading them to something else, to a different place. Our goal, therefore, as leaders, as followers of Christ, should not be for them to simply follow us, but for us to lead them. Leaders lead people places. If they don't, they're rulers. We were never supposed to be rulers. We are never supposed to be rulers over somebody else. If we just have a bunch of followers and we're not leading them to where they don't need us anymore and they can step out on their own, we have become their ruler. We're now in charge of them. We may need to be in charge for a short time, but the eventual goal is that we're leading them where? To God. We're supposed to be, as Gideon put it in the verse I said earlier, I'm not going to rule over you. God's going to rule over you. Right? He was called, Gideon was called to lead them. That's absolutely clear. But he was not called to rule them. He was never called to rule them. He says, I'm not the thing. You don't want me. You want God. We are to be leading people to God. The mark of a leader, I've heard this said many, many times, and the more I've thought about it, and the more I've taught, and the more I've worked with people, the less I'm sure that I believe this. I've heard people say the mark of a leader is whether or not anybody's following you. Now, okay, obviously that there's some truth in that, but I don't think that's the mark of a leader. I think the mark of a leader is that you know where you're going. I mean, if you don't know where you're headed, where are you leading people to? You can't lead if you don't know where you're going. Where are you leading them? Follow me, Paul says, as I follow Christ. He had a clear idea in his mind of where he was going. He wanted these people that he's talking about, look, I've tried to prepare you. You should be ready for solid food, but you still need milk. Follow along with me then. Just follow me. I'll follow Christ. With the eventual goal being, now you're ready. Now you follow Christ and have others follow along beside you. So a couple of things about that verse. Follow me as I follow Christ. Number one, I need to make sure I'm following Christ. I know that sounds kind of pejorative, it sounds kind of obvious, but I need to be constantly examining my walk. I need to constantly be examining my faith, my commitment, my intentions. I remember when I was in Boy Scouts that I got to be a certain rank where I was often in charge of leading the hikes, of leading the walks through different places, to different places. I was in charge of doing things like orienting people or teaching merit badges on compass use and things like that. Well, guess what? I had to constantly be checking my compass. I don't just set off and go, I probably know where I'm going. I'm good. You got to constantly look at your map, look at the surroundings, make sure they understand what you're doing. Why? Because they're watching you. And someday they're going to do it. And if they've not ever seen you check your compass or your map, guess what? They're going to think they can just blindly walk out and it'll be fine. God is our map. God, we've got to constantly be going again and again to God, step by step with Him. I need to make sure that I know where I'm going. Number two, I need to make sure that those who are following me, who are going along with me, are doing it for the right reasons. In other words, a discipleship relationship that's growing closer to Christ, not closer to me. I mean, this is how we avoid that cult of personality, where it's, I'm following after that person. I like the way that they do it. If people are more interested in following you than they are interested in following God, you missed it. You totally missed it. That doesn't mean you can't turn it around. It doesn't mean you can't be forgiven, but you got to repent and come back from that. It's not us. We are not the thing. This is how we maintain our humility. This is how we maintain our faithful walk with Jesus and how others are going to come alongside us. It's not me you want. It's God. He is the thing. We are not the thing. People are absolutely going to see us first. They will. We're the visible representation of God to the world. We are supposed to reflect His character. We're supposed to demonstrate our obedience to Him. People will see us, and that's okay, right? People may follow us, and that's okay. Lead them to Christ. Lead them into a deeper relationship with God. Lead them so that they can lead others. Lead yourself out of a job so that you can make more disciples and they can make more. Just think about it. You wouldn't be here if somebody hadn't done that for you. You wouldn't be here if somebody had not led you. So now what's our responsibility? Step out and lead others. Step out and let God fill the pool. It's a cycle of a leader's life to lead others to become other leaders. That should be our whole goal. God didn't say, or Jesus didn't say when he was on the earth, go, all of you anointed special people with the exact knowledge and the correct degrees in your name to be able to go. You go out and make disciples. That's not what he said. He was talking to a group of people that had no specific qualifications except for one. They'd been with Christ. That's all we can have. And that's enough. Lead others to become leaders, not to stagnate, not to get stuck following you, and certainly not for you to rule over them, but for them to grow to maturity under your leadership as you follow God. And then they begin to follow him. Keeping in mind the whole time, I know I've said it a lot, we are not the thing. You are not the thing. I think if we get that in our minds, it changes the paradigm of how we lead others. We're not leading them to us. We don't have to perform and do the right thing exactly the right way. We're pointing them to God. We're trusting him to do it. Gideon trusted God to do it. Gideon said, what does he say? Get up, for the Lord has given you victory over the Midianites. Boy, that was a pretty bold statement. He was totally trusting that God was going to fill the pool. He's completely trusting that God was going to do it. Our lives are just background. Everything gets flipped. Just like what we were talking about earlier, the music that's the background has now needs to be moved out into the front. It needs to be the thing that people remember, that people take away. Not that they remember us, that they remember God. That we become incidental, that we fade into the background, that we are no longer the most important thing in that relationship. Though we may be the action, it's God that's fueling it. It's him who's behind the scenes, and it's our job to make people aware of that, to draw attention to him whenever possible. To make his name known, to lead others as God leads us, to learn to trust as Gideon did, and then to faithfully follow and faithfully lead and faithfully lay down our crown at the feet of him who's worthy. Right? Isn't the scriptures and the songs that we sing, we fall down, we lay our crowns at the feet of Jesus. Crown him with many crowns. I will not rule over you, nor will my sons rule over you. God will rule over you. I really hope that you've enjoyed this series on Gideon and that you've learned that there is a little bit of Gideon in all of us. Every single one of these things may not apply. But at some point, we have all felt less than worthy, and God has come in and declared us worthy. At some point, we have felt frustrated and upset about what's going on in our lives. And God has said, why don't you just follow me? And at some point, he's going to call us to take a bold move. To take a bold step, to say something bold, to do something bold. And we need to have been walking step by step with him the whole way to where we learn to risk it all for him. Would you pray with me? God, as we come to the end of our time, as we come to the end of our time today and the end of our time studying Gideon, Lord, I thank you for the man of God that he was, I thank you for the story that's captured in the book, but I thank you mostly that you are the one who guided and orchestrated all of it, that you ordained every step of it. Lord, would you do that in our lives now? Would you just get inside of us, Lord, and fuel and guide us? Lord, instead of us resisting and trying to go the way we want to go, can we just follow hard after you instead? Lord, I pray that we would lay down our barriers, lay down our walls, lay down our resistance, and instead to just open our eyes and our minds up to what you want, to take great steps out in faith, not so that we will be great, but so that your name will be great. God, I pray that each person here would just feel that this is words for them, that they are ordained for this. They have been called. So lead us, Lord, and then show us how we can lead others. We bless you, God, in Jesus' holy name. Amen.